is the Day Zero Update for December 11th, 2016. I'm Felipe Lenovo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And it was a pretty eventful week this week. Not a lot of huge major announcements, but just a lot of very interesting small ones. So, yeah, it's like, I guess everybody's getting their stuff out of the way before the holidays so they can go home. So we got a lot to talk about, a game that was just announced recently that I'm kind of looking forward to. So luckily that's up first. But yeah, this is also the first week that we can safely say that The Last Guardian is out and people have been playing it. You and Chris among them.
Yep.
And yeah, I think we're going to discover whether it was worth the wait. So there's that. But yeah, before we get to that, let's not let's talk a little bit about what we've actually been doing this week. And for me, it hasn't been a whole heck of a lot. I talked about the server issues we had over on Let's Weekend, so I'm not going to reiterate those. But I will say I've been playing Ultimate Marvel 3, which is fun. But it really seems like a game that was kind of tailored to an audience that already knew what it was. Because... correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like there's a tutorial in there at all in this
one. There's trials, and that's pretty much...
Yeah, that's...
That's what serves the purpose of tutorials.
Yeah, there's... Like, other than the little PDF manual that they have, there's nothing that explains the basic system. Yeah, it seems like it was...
There's some important mechanics that they needed to go over, like push blocking and things like that.
Yeah.
So that... That is kind of strange now that you mention it.
Yeah. I'm guessing they figure, well, people who are buying this probably already know about it, so...
Yeah. It's Marvel.
Yeah. it's definitely Marvel. Yeah, it's a solid port. I don't know if you've found any issues with it, but I haven't found anything.
It seems okay to me. I'd heard that there were some people who were finding some issues, but I've not run into anything. That being said, I haven't played a whole ton of it just because I've been busy myself with a few issues that I'll be going into here in a moment.
Yeah. So we've both been playing a little bit of that. I attempted to play Garou on Steam. That didn't work well.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to play the game when you can only see a quarter of the screen. So.
I obviously am one of the bigger SNK fans around, really. But how do you make a port of a game from 1999, make it to PC, and have it burdened with issues that you wouldn't run into when running the same game on Fightcade or Win Coax or something like that? How does that happen?
I don't know. My guess is, just sloppy development. Because I don't know about the PS4 version. If it has that problem, well, obviously it doesn't have that particular problem, but it apparently has other problems. It's I don't know. They hired .engine to do it, so...
I really hope they didn't base the PS4 version on the Dreamcast version, or I'm going to be very... upset with them.
It doesn't seem like it. It seems like it is the. It's based on the arcade ROMs. Both the, I think the PS4 port and the PC port are both handled by .in. Yeah, they did an okay job on the PS4 port, but seems like the PC one has issues. And I don't know why SNK keeps trusting them. I'm curious now if I buy any of the other SNK ports on Steam, if I'm going to run into the same issue. So, yeah. Apparently, if you have your text scaling anything other than 100%, you're not going to be able to play the game properly or at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So, until they fix that, my review is going to be delayed, because I could change my text scaling down to 100%, then I can't see anything. So, yeah, not going to do that. Yeah, so, congrats, SNK, on launching Garou: Mark of the Wolves on Steam. Some people are actually enjoying it. I would like to be one of them, but I can't right now. So, yeah, get that fixed, please.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my week. What about you, Ben?
I, too, have been partaking of the Marvel, as noted. Not really a whole ton just yet, but that's probably going to change in the coming week. I've also been going through the motions on Heaven's Ward, doing my daily roulettes and duties and things to, you know, try and gear up better than I am right now. Just really stretching the game out as best I can until 3.5 drops and we get that big run up to Stormblood. Also, I've been finally laying the groundwork for my next Sound Off video, which has been a long time coming. I've been really busy with, you know, getting acquainted with a new job and a few other issues that have been, you know, that I've had to handle in recent weeks. Not the least of which being a terminally ill hard drive in my computer that I'll be replacing on Tuesday.
Yeah.
When I get on the other side of that.
Yeah. This is the computer you're Skyping on right now, so you can, yes, in theory, drop out of the call like immediately, and
at least you'll know what happened.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll keep an eye on that.
But I'm laying the groundwork for the next Sound Off video. Normally, I don't get into doing like flavor of the week type stuff. Like if somebody, and that's the nature of this podcast too. If it's something that you're going to be hearing about in every other podcast that you're listening to, then it's probably less likely to be featured on here. Same theory with my Sound Off videos, but at the same time, you know, right now we've got an interesting thing going on with Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite being announced, and a lot of people are speculating what the roster is going to be like and why, and I am totally going to get in on that.
Yeah.
Let's just, so my next Sound Off video is going to be a projected roster for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be taking a lot of things into account, like the MCU push and the Fox situation and, you know, the move to 2-on-2 from 3-on-3. I think that will afford them a smaller roster, whether they decide to go for it in light of that or not, you know, I can't say, but it's something that I'm considering. There's the whole all new, all different initiative that they've got going on their comic side that I think is going to, I think it's going to be seen in this game at least in one or two ways. And yeah, that's all going to be reflected in my final roster. So, look forward to that. Hopefully, when the time comes, you guys enjoy it. I'll certainly be back on the show talking about it after I launch the video. Hopefully, no longer than a week or so out. How about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, Cold Steel 2 is done.
Hey.
I finished it.
It's done or you're done?
No, it's done. I finished it.
I know. I know what I said.
But are you done?
Is it done with you?
Yeah, at this point, yeah. Not for any lack of not liking it. I enjoyed it immensely, but that's about as much as I can get out of it.
I get that exhale before Trails in the Sky the Third.
Yeah. So, yeah, this... obviously, you know, Dan Reb has played it too, and he can sort of tell you sort of the towards the ending of this game and all it entails. There's this major mind screw of a dungeon that you have to do before the game can actually end. And of course, being that this is a Trails game, the finale is not actually the finale at all. It's basically a prologue to an intermission that then goes into an epilogue. Now, here's the cool part, though, and I think if by playing this game, if what I experienced in Cold Steel 1 is going to be any indication, I think I have a good idea of what Cold Steel 3 is going to be like to a certain extent. Specifically, the fact that I think a good chunk of Cold Steel 3 is probably going to take place in Crossbell.
That would be interesting.
And the reason is because that intermission I mentioned, yeah, you play Lloyd and Genois from Azure and Zero.
Yep.
And then the boss battle is actually Reen. Because, okay, those of you who are already familiar with Azure and Zero, even though technically it isn't over here yet, and because the stuff that happens in Cold Steel sort of happens concurrently with the stuff in the Crossbell arc, basically, Crossbell declares its independence. Then it somehow manages to destroy Guerrilla Fortress, which is where those giant orbital guns pointed at the Republic were placed. And then this giant Azure tree grows in the middle of the city for some reason. And eventually what happens is that at the end of Cold Steel 2, the Erebonian Empire invades Crossbell and annexes it. So Reen more or less is acting as an agent of the Empire for that one brief moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at the promotional material, what little we have of Cold Steel 3 so far, Reen is much older than in the first two games.
He's older. I think, yeah, he's, well, he's still same age when the stuff in Cold Steel 2 happens. He's still, yeah, because Cold Steel 2 basically ends when his first year at Thor's Academy ends. Hmm. So he's still there. He's getting ready for second year and getting ready to welcome the first years.
Yeah, what I'm saying is in the Cold Steel 3 promotional materials that we've seen so far,
he looks older, he looks taller, he's got a whole new wardrobe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of suggestion that he's probably working as a bracer now, because they kind of sort of imply it towards the end. Tovel brings it up in conversation with him. They also showed, we also got Elise, idea of Elisa's new look as well. And another one. And she's wearing a bustier with a zipper, apparently.
Because Japan.
Yeah. And
I would also say because Elise.
Yeah. But it's also possible, like, you know, like you said, she's older, because otherwise she would have gotten a boob job at some point. Yeah. Because, again, Japan. Yeah. The game does end rather, I mean, it's got an otherwise happy ending, but it's a bittersweet one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Class 7 basically disbands at that point.
They really like to let their games just land with impact and then leave it up to you to sort out the whole sense of settling.
Mm-hmm. And, so that's all done. So now we know, of course, is that they are working on Cold Steel 3. And yes, we've already gotten some looks at it. And they've been thinking about whether or not they're going to make it a PS4 exclusive, which could be problematic. Hmm. If you wanted to carry over your progress from Cold Steel 1 and 2.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not unprecedented for them to have cutoffs.
Yeah. But the thing is, see, you get, like, you develop, like, relationships and stuff in this game, so, you know, they're going to have to come up with some way to carry over one to the other.
Yeah. They'll probably use the cloud saves
function
on the PS3.
So, okay, so anyway, that's done, and so last night I finally started The Last Guardian.
Yep. After it finished installing.
Yeah.
But I heard it's actually a pretty big install.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I haven't played it that much, but for what I've played, yeah, it's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's definitely a Ueda / Team Ico game. Yeah. Like, from the very beginning. Hmm. You know, it's got that sort of fictional language. You're not really told all that much of what's going on. All types of saturated lighting. And, of course, there's Trico, the big, giant puppy bird that you basically wake up next to when the game starts.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you start playing him, well, you don't play Trico, of course. You play the little kid who's working with him. But the thing is, Trico basically acts the way you would expect a new pet to act with you when you're first introduced to him. He doesn't really quite trust you just yet. He kind of isn't sure what to make of you. And he won't automatically obey a command you give him just yet. You know, basically you have to treat Trico the way you would treat any other animal.
Yeah.
He has to learn to trust you first. And that's about all I can say right now, but it's definitely worth playing.
Yeah.
So what about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I've also been playing The Last Guardian, and Sarva definitely has all the hallmarks of a Team Eco game. It's very beautiful, a great way of bringing together like nature as well as like human areas that are built. I just see sort of nature kind of take back over all of this, these structures and such. And and it also has all of the control and camera issues you have come to know from their previous games.
Yeah.
They have not necessarily fine-tuned that part of the game. So there are definitely points where you get into tight corners with the camera and kind of lose your way a little bit, especially if you're trying to see where Trico is. And sometimes the camera automatically points over to him. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it does. Sometimes I go try to adjust the camera and I think it takes over again. It's like, no, here he's at. You're going to see him right there. It's like, oh, okay. And control stuff, there's some issues there as well where I go to like pick up barrels and...
Which are important, by the way, and you find out why.
Yeah, they have his food in there. So you kind of pick him up and throw him over to him so he can eat him.
Yeah.
And there are times where you try and pick him up and you got to like finagle with your character to get him to the right position to be able to pick it up.
Yeah, because sometimes they're shoved in like little holes and shelves and...
They're up on a ledge you have to get to.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're buried in the ground. You got to pull them out. And control scheme's a little bit weird because triangle is your jump button.
Yeah.
So it takes a little while to get used to that instead of expecting the X button, which isn't really used all that much. Hmm. So yeah, it's things like that. It's like rough around the edges, but the good stuff is exactly what you want out of this game from Team Eco. And there are definitely some cool aspects as Trico gets to be more familiar with you and become more of a loyal pet or friend.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah. As what's that?
I was just going to say, how much of the holdup on this game's development do you think was simply developing Trico's AI?
I actually think a good chunk of it, probably, because Trico... Not only is he awe-inspiring to look at, but he is uncannily intelligent.
Yeah, he's it's probably mostly that and asset generation. Mm-hmm. So just developing the world, and there's not very much that they reuse over and over again.
Yeah.
You go to a lot of unique areas throughout the few hours I've played.
Yeah. There's also a just metric ton of very, very subtle animations that both Trico and the boy have. As I don't think many games use body language as well as this game does.
Yeah.
So yeah, that probably took some time too.
And Trico will actually help you, like point you out to like where you might need to go next if you're lost, because like I said, Trico is very smart, and he'll do everything from like sit down and look up at like a ledge you need to go to, or he'll like paw at something.
Hmm.
Yeah, and there are times where we're trying to get to the next area, which requires him to basically jump up high up over this, for lack of a better word, like a this wall.
And he isn't exactly sure if he can do it just yet.
Yeah,
He
especially like early
basically.
on when you get out of the little area you're in, he's jumping across the pillars that are just rocks stacked up. And they're as shaky as you think they would be. It's like, oh, you gotta find a better way because you're gonna knock one of these over. And somehow you manage to not knock them over. But it's also scary as fuck when you're up on a ledge and you just see him just fucking jumping up to your ledge, and you're like, fuck, I gotta run away. I was gonna fucking crush you, but.
Just a good example. Early on in the game, there's a part where you come to this, I guess, a pond or a lagoon, for
Yeah.
lack of a better word, the really pretty blue water. And I do mean that. Like, that is one of the most early on in the game. It is a very just gorgeous scenery. And so you're swimming down there and you're looking up, and Trico's still up on the cliff, and he's not quite sure if he wants to jump down or not. Like, he looks like he wants to. He's like, I don't want to. I'm scared. And eventually, what you do is you end up tempting him to come down by, taking the little barrels of his food and throwing it into the lake. And he just straight up, he's like, "Yay!"
Yeah, if you call him over to like a little body of water, he'll lay down and roll around in it and sort of shake it off afterwards. Which I wish kind of helped wash off the blood that's on him. Because when you first meet him, he's got spears in him, so you pull him out. That helps him start to trust you a bit more. And that sticks. He doesn't wash it off as well as you would like, but still fun to have those sorts of animations where he can just play around as like an animal. And also he has a butthole, and he poops. I took a screenshot of the butthole, and
Of
it's
course you did.
yeah. I mean, there are times when you're crawling, you almost go up it, because it's the crawling up him is a little bit weird. Especially when you're on his legs, and it's like, okay, wait a minute, which way is me rotating around the leg, and I'm trying to go up, and it changes weird ways. It's like, and sometimes you get under his tail, and it's like, oh,
Nope.
Didn't need to be there.
Hello.
yeah, and yeah, I think that screenshot is also right near the water area, I think. No, that's. Yeah, I don't know where that one's at. But yeah, you notice that stuff pretty easily, and I believe there's a trophy for watching him poop.
Because of course there is.
And yeah, it's really good so far. Definitely has some of the frustrations you kind of expect out of that sort of game. That definitely feels like it didn't change too much from what it was, years and years ago. But it's great that it's done and it's out there,
Yeah,
so now
and
people can actually
it's
pretty good
getting,
reviews.
yeah, I mean, they're not like 10/10 all the way down, but they're positive. Most
Yep.
people do seem to enjoy it. I think a lot of it is just that, it's been a good, what, like 10, 12 years
About 10 years
since
since Shadow.
yeah, 10
yeah.
years.
And Shadow came out on the PS2.
Yeah.
And I guess over that time, we've all kind of come to realize that, as awesome as Shadow of the Colossus is, which it definitely is, there are these little irritants to it that have kind of gone over into The Last Guardian as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Especially when they're both about crawling onto big creatures.
yeah.
One of the things I really like about the Team Eco games is that the major theme through all three is relationships. The first one's obviously the relationship between the boy and Yorda, and you got Wander and Agro. Now here it's the boy and Trico. And it's really cool to see that they just keep that sort of theme going on through all three games and see how that grows as we keep playing. Yeah. Like, I'm at the point where I've seen another Trico.
Yeah, there are other Tricos.
Yeah. That's
so
all.
So now the only question that remains now is who's going to end up dying first?
Yeah. Yep. How evil is this one?
Yeah.
And as for other things, I've also been playing Let It Die, which was shown off at PlayStation Experience. It's the new Grasshopper manufacturer game, which is free to play, and it is kind of like a roguelike Dark Souls.
Oh.
It's kind of a very weird game. When I was playing, I was like, really? Is that what that is? And it's got the sort of Suda 51 style to it, as one of the first things you do after you make your character is you meet a skateboarding skeleton reaper with a Spanish accent named Uncle Death.
Okay.
And he sort of teaches you the controls and all that. I think I put a video up of the late title screen that is pretty evocative of the entire experience. Let's see. There we go. Yeah, I'm going to post this in the chat for you guys to look at. And yeah, it's pretty cool. It's much like the Dark Souls games. When you come upon enemies, you definitely want to very much dodge and look for openings to attack. But more so in this, there's a lot of loot to pick up. Not so much Diablo style in terms of variance, but in numbers, definitely. Yeah. As I've gotten some good runs in, where I had like a fireworks gun. I just shot fireworks at enemies. And like a pistol, and then a bat with nails in it, and some stuff like that. And one of the cool things is that when you die, your character is turned into what they call a hater, which is sort of an AI version of that character that you can send to other players to try to kill them. So it's like that invasion aspect of Dark Souls. If you are playing it and need to sort of quit out for whatever reason, you die. So you're not able to save and continue later. So when I did that my last session, I just put all my stuff in the chest that to save it. Left like one item on there, and I'm gonna probably try and send him out, see what happens. There are elevators that are an interesting thing, where you can sort of go back to the home base and sort of do your upgrades and all that, which is pretty cool. There's like a mushroom aspect to it, where you pick up mushrooms and frogs that are sort of your healing potions, that sort of thing. But the mushrooms can have different effects, so you definitely want to pay attention to what you're looking at to eat, because some of them will be like, oh, you get extra attack speed or better damage, or it's poisoned.
Or you start so tripping balls.
Yeah. I don't know. You're tripping from the start. So it's really cool. It's obviously free to play. People should definitely check it out if they are interested in any of that. I just like the style to it, and looking forward to playing some more of that. And along with that, I've been playing Titanfall 2, which is really good. This time around, they have a new single-player campaign, and I put a couple hours into that, and it's a lot of fun. The story is pretty good, as you are sort of a rifleman, I think they call you, who is not a pilot yet, but they're called into action and your superior officer, who is a pilot, gets killed in the invasion that you're doing. And he, in his dying breath, he transfers ownership of the mech over to you. And so initially, you have to sort of go around to a couple areas and get batteries for it. And all that way, you're doing your wall running and all that sort of stuff. And it's a really great way to get used to those mechanics and just have fun without worrying too much about, playing the multiplayer where you're getting shot at all the time.
Yeah.
Once you get the mech, it's really cool. They incorporate the various types of mechs as just loadouts that you can switch to as you find them in the campaign.
Okay.
So I got the first two, which one of them is called Tone, where you basically, if you're fighting other mechs, you just get 3 shots on him successively. And then you can just hit R1 to fire a bunch of missiles, guided missiles at him. So it lets you sort of get a couple pot shots in and then just take off a good bit of damage.
Yeah.
And so far I'm doing pretty well in that. Then they obviously throw you out of the mech to sort of split up so you can have some more one-on-one interactions with the other soldiers and enemies that are around. And so far that's been pretty good. I've been playing the multiplayer as well. And that is still a lot of fun. The thing they do that's really cool are the networks, which is sort of clans, but more useful for most people.
Yeah.
Because there's sort of like a Facebook group, in a sense, where you join it and you can see on the main multiplayer menu, like, here's all the people online on the from this network.
Yeah.
And you can just instantly start up a match, invite people from the network, and just start populating matches with those people.
Hmm.
Instead of just saying, oh, I got to invite this guy, and then this guy, and then this guy.
Yeah.
And hope they're all online and ready to go. Just say, okay, everybody in this group, I'm starting this match, join up.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing. Makes it a lot easier to get like-minded people into matches with you.
Yeah.
And sort of as you're sitting on the main menu, other people will do that. So you can say, oh, I'm going to join this one, or I'm not interested in that mode. I'll wait for another one, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously you can still go into the matchmaking and go solo if you want. They have happy hours, which you get double XP for like an hour or so.
Yeah.
Which is set by whoever makes the groups. So that's another like cool sort of aspect of that try to get everybody in at least for 1 hour.
Yeah.
To get active. So that's they got some really cool ideas over there. And with this one, they've taken out a bit more of the Call of Duty influences the last time around.
Yeah.
The first game had all of the same sort of challenge stuff and the leveling system that Call of Duty had. This time around, the way that they do leveling up is essentially you need, like what they call merits, which essentially like, oh, you completed a match, that's one merit. You won, that's another merit. You escaped, that's another merit. Or if you do well enough with your rifle or your anti-Titan weapon, that sort of thing, you get another merits, things like that, and you just need so many merits to level up.
Hmm.
So it gets it out of the way of just, oh, you killed 5 people and died 20 times, you only get 500 XP, but need 2,000 to level up.
Yeah.
It gets it away from that, gets it more towards, you just played the game, you get at least some good progress, and help bring the good players and the mediocre players closer together in that front, which is really smart.
Yeah.
Something that more shooters should be definitely doing. Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with that. That's pretty much it. Yeah, we've been snowed in, so it's good time to be getting some games in.
And speaking of mechs, well, we're going to get to the first story of the day, which is one that I've been looking forward to for a long time.
What a lot of people have been looking forward to for a long time.
Yeah, so at MechCon 2016 this year, well, because it's 2016, that would be why it would be called MechCon 2016, now, wouldn't it? Which is a thing that I didn't know existed up until recently. The folks at Piranha Studios have announced MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries. This is, they've got a dedicated team over there working on this particular game. It's single player only. It's going to be based around the time of the Third Succession War. So you're going to be dealing with Intersphere here. So, and that's it. That's all we know. It's like, that's it. We got like about 8 or 9 minutes of gameplay footage that you can check out. It looks really nice. Yeah, hopefully it turns out to be really good. I think, you know, MechWarrior Online existing is actually going to help this game because, well, a whole bunch of the assets are already done. So, yeah. So it's basically like MechWarrior Online without the online. And that's kind of what people wanted anyway. So just saying.
Yeah,
looks good. We'll be looking forward to hearing more details on this. And hopefully they don't pull another bait and switch like they did a few years ago with that wonderful single player teaser footage that we saw and then never saw damn thing. So that's MechWarrior. So-
No multiplayer online or no multiplayer component whatsoever?
We don't know. I would imagine they'll probably do something like co-op because, you know, that makes sense for a mercenary team.
I was just curious because my big run with MechWarrior was in MechWarrior 3 and I had some pretty good times on the multiplayer on that one, so.
Well, I'd imagine they'll probably do that kind of thing, co-op, some PvP stuff, but the MechWarrior Online exists for exactly that. But yeah, I'm actually kind of wondering if this isn't really a sign that MechWarrior Online is going to be sunsetting and they're going to be moving all their effort towards this. So that's also another possibility. So we shall keep this one on our radar to see how it develops. Yeah. Moving on, Konami. You know, actually, it's been... No, we had a Konami story last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're in the news again. They sent a cease and desist letter to a developer who was developing in Castlevania, the Unreal Engine 4. Yeah, so they can't do that anymore. Except, there's a little wrinkle in this one.
Yeah, somebody inside of Konami... actually quite likes the work this guy's been doing and is making a legitimate push to get the project licensed.
They really should do that. Because, you know, they've got people who really like their IP. They've got, it looks like from what I'm seeing of this guy's work, he's quite talented. If you're a company that's seriously trying to rebuild yourself, you need all the talent you can get, and you need all the goodwill you can get. So, yeah, saying, screw you, this is our IP, when you're basically somebody is sitting there telling you, hey, I'm willing to work for you, it's not a smart thing to do, to just try to shut this guy down.
Yep. Yeah, though his first attempt at doing this, he tried to do a Kickstarter for it.
That's
not okay.
That's really not bad idea.
Yeah, don't do that.
This is, I was looking at
that's how you get a justified cease and desist.
Yeah, because he was basically trying to get the Castlevania license. Like, the other issue is the Castlevania license. I don't have it. From what I've seen, it is expensive, but if I can pay for the license, I'll be able to sell the game and have no cease and desist thrown at me from Konami.
Which, that's of course, how resulted works. In him getting a cease and desist from Konami.
Yeah.
So,
It has 600,000, what is this? Norwegian Krone.
Hmm,
and got 2,000. So people sniffed that out and said, this is sketchy as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be one to follow. If this turns out that he actually does get the license and, you know, he gets to actually work on this officially, yeah, it might be a sign that Konami really is serious about, you know, rebuilding their brand, which they've managed to, you know, flush down the toilet in the last few years. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
If they don't want to make it, might as well let somebody else do it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, he can't do any worse than Mercury Steam did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Keep an eye on this one. So, Chris, Hitman's getting some fun stuff now.
Yeah, so on the 13th, this Tuesday, they're going to be releasing a new update that adds the Holiday Hoarders mission, which is set in Paris. Basically overhauls the whole area, the mansion and all that, with Christmas decorations. And you're tasked with, I think there's two thieves that have gotten into this fashion show, and it's your job to take them out. And along with that, it's probably going to be a lot of silly stuff. They show in the video Agent 47 in a big Santa outfit.
Okay, that's a win right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's just what we know about is going to be in there. So there's probably going to be other silly stuff that is going to be really fun to explore. And yeah, this is free. And the onus for making this is that they are partnering with the World Cancer Research Fund and sort of saying, hey, you enjoyed this? Maybe donate some to these guys.
Yeah.
And if you have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
So I like their URL, which is www.wcrf-uk.org/hitman.
Hmm.
Nice Hitman URL for this charity. Hopefully nobody mistakes that
for something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Get your cancer Hitman.
So fair. Looking forward to that.
Before they officially wrap up the first season, they got one little bit out.
Yeah.
Coming out. So, yep.
So, okay. Next up, we got Dragon Quest Heroes 2 has been announced. It's coming out in North America April 25th, 2017.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm guessing that Dragon Quest Heroes 1 did well enough that Square Enix is okay with doing another one. So,
yep. Mm-hmm. They're adding multiplayer.
What was that whole distortion thing going on?
Yeah, they're adding multiplayer and a couple new heroes. And that seems to be pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be more than enough for most people.
Yeah. Mm. Well, they also did kind of mention at one point that, you know, they're really doubling down on Dragon Quest now, so...
Yeah.
If this is part of that, people want the mainline Dragon Quest games. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's have some of those, please.
Yes.
Yeah, they're working on it.
Yeah. Apart from that, what else are we getting? Oh, yeah, Nier Automata, the demo. It's coming actually very soon.
Yep. It's going to be on
22nd.
December 22nd. That's right.
Right before Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you can...
Thursday before Christmas.
Yeah. You can play some very wacky, or whatever
yeah.
it turns out to be.
And of course, if you played the original Nier, you know that that wacky RPGing actually hides something very, very dark and nightmarish underneath the surface.
Yeah. So, look forward to that. Hopefully, you know, this doesn't actually scare people off. Because, Nier is one of those series that it's very polarizing, I would say.
Yeah, that's
a mild way of putting it.
Oh, yeah.
So, look forward to that. At least, you know, people will be able to download it and make up their own mind.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, we're just kind of moving through them because these are kind of small little bits. So this next one is kind of strange. The White House, in association with Shaq, is doing a competitive gaming event.
Yeah, with Twitch.
With Twitch.
On Monday, this coming Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah.
Yep. They're going to have a bunch of Twitch people doing some stuff, as well as the Rocket League Pro-Am
mm-hmm.
tournament, I'm guessing what it is. And Justin Wong's also going to be there with facing Mike Ross in Street Fighter V.
Hmm. Yep.
Exactly know why they would be doing this.
Going out on top with Obama.
Yeah.
It's a way to promote competitive gaming.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. I want to see Obama play Justin Wong. That's what I want.
Would it surprise you?
No.
No, it would not.
Yeah, I think the aim of this whole event is promoting the healthcare stuff.
Yeah.
As the deadline for that is on the 15th, I think.
Yeah.
So they're trying to drum up some more support for that.
Yeah, drum up some more support for it before the Trump administration deep sixes it. So
yeah,
there's comment about going to the White House to watch it. It's like, no, they're not going to let you in.
No. Oh, yeah, tune into Twitch tomorrow. Have fun. This next one confuses and disappoints me. Our friends in Russia have claimed that FIFA 17 violates their, I don't even know what to call it, their gay...
their gay propaganda law.
Yeah.
Yep. It's exactly what it sounds like. Russia has this federal law that prohibits quote unquote propaganda that quote unquote promotes homosexuality.
And this isn't about the weird glitches where guys are kissing each other and things like that.
No. It's because there's a rainbow jersey.
Yeah, the Premier League in England is doing a campaign called Rainbow Laces, promoting more support for lesbian, gay, bi, and trans players and fans.
Yeah.
And so they partnered with EA to get them in the game, and now Russia people are mad. They're putting their gay stuff in my game.
Well, not specifically Russia. It was a couple of MPs from the Communist Party of the Russian Federation.
Yeah, from the parliament.
Yeah, and the Russian Duma.
Conservatives.
Yeah, the thing about the Communist Party in Russia is that they are ultra, like, super-duper hardcore neo-Stalinists. Hmm. So, you know, their social views reflect that.
Yeah. So,
they've also gotten more chummy with the Orthodox Church in recent years as well.
Yeah. So... it means if EA wants to keep, you know, FIFA 17 on the shelves over there, they're going to have to put out a region-specific patch.
Yeah, I think the quote here is, introduce changes to the programming code or the age classification of this information product.
Okay.
You can kind of tell they're not used to dealing with games.
No.
It's information product.
Or people.
And in sort of bright news on that front... EA has been named one of the world's best places to work for LGBTQ employees.
Mm. Yeah,
the Human Rights Campaign. So, good on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, just improve your business practices.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think EA has actually been improving their business practices slowly but surely. They've started to make less anti-consumer decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So. We'll see how keep that going. I mean, Mass Effect Andromeda is coming out next year, so, you know, maybe they'll lop off the ending and sell that as DLC. It's not like that's, you know, never happened before. Yeah. Okay. So this next one is kind of really, really, really cool.
Yeah, so with the bankruptcy of United Front... the company that I guess takes over their possessions to auction off for to recover whatever money they can.
Yeah.
Sold off a bunch of dev kits. Yeah. One of them happened to end up in I'm not sure if they give him a name here. Kaneda 2004.
Hmm.
He got a PlayStation 4 Pro dev kit.
Hmm.
And sort of took some pictures of the main dashboard, which shows a Neo mode option to enable and boot history and that sort of stuff. And so it says, well, this is a huge thing, especially being a fairly recent dev kit that generally if the people that were doing this auction knew what they had, they would have returned it to Sony.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like they're supposed to with that sort of stuff. But now that he is in... control this, he found out there is about 800 gigs of content on there that is locked off because there's an expired dev kit license that he's obviously not going to be able to enable. So, but they are encrypted once the license expires, and they're going to find out members of Assembler Games who might be able to actually extract the files and see what the heck they were working on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this whole story is about.
Yeah.
This will be one to follow.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
You know, this kind of thing doesn't really end up in the public very often.
I'm just not sure what surprises me more, that they didn't return it to Sony the way they were supposed to, or that they didn't scrub their files off of it before they sold it.
Well, they kind of shut down real quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine wasn't a ton of time to wipe their hard drives and all that.
Yeah.
Because they're basically trying to do a last-minute sale on their new game to keep them going, and nope, they've shut down the Monday after.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, you know, that kind of sucked.
It's like their Hail Mary attempt to get going again.
Yeah. But, you know, 800 gigs of stuff, if they can manage to, you know, decrypt that, there's probably some very interesting stuff in there. So,
mm-hmm.
So.
They just find out it's updates for Warframe and stuff like that.
I'm sure that's part of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably,
it's like all these guys are just playing games on here all the time.
That wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Angel Studios, before they were working on the new Red Dead Redemption, were working on an Oni sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
Oni, for those you don't know, was, I believe it was Bungie's first entry into console gaming.
Yep.
Yeah, it was their first PS2 game.
Yeah, it was
a PS2 launch game.
Yeah. Before then, they had been primarily a Macintosh developer, I believe.
They had started on PC at that point.
Okay, yeah, because they had that strategy game they started making, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was sort of a heavy send up on Ghost in the Shell, and it had a lot of promise, but it had some problems too.
Didn't review great.
No, it didn't review great. But you know, I liked it. I liked the idea behind it. I wish it had been executed a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of thrilled that this was something that was being worked on. So maybe, you know, when they get done with Red Dead 2, they could go back to that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been canceled for a while now.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Probably about 10 years ago.
Dope. That's a shame.
Yeah, because they were working on this before they start on Red Dead.
The first Red Dead, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, well. Somebody will have to make it sooner or later. Maybe Bungie, you know, or whatever's left of them.
Well, they're working on Destiny right now.
Yeah, all of the Destinies.
Yeah,
there's actual footage of this. POTP Online has a nice video up. It looked like the UI for that was actually pretty good. As they got the sort of health and such on the bottom right under the player's feet. So there's nice like HUD-less look to the game.
Yeah, semi-HUDless. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
But we'll never see it again. So, no.
Nope.
So what we might see in the not-too-distant future is maybe a new Soul Calibur, according to this 20th anniversary trailer that Namco Bandai released.
Mm-hmm.
20th anniversary is toward the end of this month.
Yep.
All along, they've kind of insinuated that they were going to be doing something for the anniversary, but haven't actually shown anything yet.
Yeah.
Now it's looking like whatever it is, we're going to find out probably on the anniversary itself.
Yeah. Well, okay, we know it's not going to be a free-to-play online game.
No, they've been down that road.
They did that. Yeah, it didn't go well. Let's see. It could be Soul Calibur 6. But I would be totally happy with a Soul Calibur Mega Mix style game.
All the boobs.
Yeah. It's not so There's much so boobs, many of them.
Yeah, just bring all of the characters together, you know, refine the engine, make it as good as it can be, put it on the PS4.
Make lateral movement viable again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soul Calibur Paradise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say what Namco is going to do with this one. I mean, it's got a fan base.
Yeah, I think they've got to swing for the fences. If it's, you know, they're the 20th anniversary, the series has kind of been on a bit of a decline.
They were so close with 5, though.
Mm-hmm.
They almost made it. Like,
just the terrible sidestepping in that game and the awkward inclusion of basically trying to make Street Fighter 4 Ultras in there.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, just kind of, I don't know, elements that didn't quite mesh together. And yet they had, you know, some really great Virtua Fighter style, you know, flowchart moves in there. It's like, you could see that where they wanted to go, and then maybe somebody in marketing said, no, we got to have super moves, and we got to have screen flashes and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I'd say go back to 2 or 4, build from that foundation, and then just go from there.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we don't have long to wait before we find out what this actually is.
Nope.
And Namco's also been in the news as far as Tekken 7 goes.
Yeah, Kuma and Panda joining the Tekken 7 cast.
Not that I'm really surprised.
As individual characters, separate move sets.
Taking up 2 character slots.
Yes, they are. And this before we have Craig Marduk, Julia Chang, Lei Wu Long, Bruce Irvin, Eddie Gordo. I'm just going to let that hang for a second.
Yeah. Well, I would be okay if Eddie Gordo didn't show up, to be perfectly honest. You know, if you got Christy in there, that's fine. You know, you got Keporia represented quite well in both. But
well, no, she's not in there yet either.
Oh, so okay. Yeah, seems like they're missing a few very key characters here.
Yeah,
now we got plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's still 6 months away for it.
Closer to, I would say, 3.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I heard summer.
Now we got Akuma and Kuma on the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kuma. Now at least King is getting some interesting gear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think they could have gone with something a little more flamboyant.
Yeah, for those of us who are listening, you're probably going to want to explain this one, because, yeah.
Yeah, apparently they cut a deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling and got King fitted with a new alternate costume inspired by Kazuchika Okada. Bling everywhere.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
Actually looks like an actual wrestling mask rather than just a head that doesn't move.
Yeah, it's a luchador mask with the leopard on top.
Yeah.
Tiger.
Yeah. And apparently they're also adding the Rainmaker to his move set. Nice. So if you're looking for an extra flashy way to end a match, then there you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the kind of cross promotion that I kind of like. Because in
I'm actually surprised this is the extent of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in context, this actually makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, I'm surprised it took them until Tekken 7 to get some actual wrestling sponsorships for King or any of his offshoots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tekken 6, it was, they were going for more of an MMA thing with Tap Out.
Yeah.
And so, they're just kind of, I think they're just kind of wandering around as far as merchandising partnerships go.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, they don't want to overdo it, so.
Yeah. Some of the Tap Out designs from Tekken 6 were pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll find out about this one. PS4 and Xbox One. And PC, actually, too. Forgot about that.
Yep. There's plenty of PC footage out there.
Yeah. Well, the arcade machines are PC, so yeah. Yep. Can't really stop that too much.
Yep.
So, moving on. Yeah, some Nintendo news. Yeah, Reggie was on Jimmy Fallon, along with Shigeru Miyamoto.
Mm-hmm.
They showed off the Switch. They showed off Super Mario Run.
See, now that's another statement that you could just kind of let hang for a minute.
Yeah.
That Reggie and Miyamoto were on the Tonight Show.
Yeah. This is a little bit different as far as Nintendo's past marketing efforts have been. You know? They need to get their audience back, and well, I think a lot of people do watch the Tonight Show, so yeah, that's putting it front and center with the audience that they really want to get.
So, yeah, and so you know they showed us the Switch, and it looked good.
Yeah,
you know,
it can run Dark Souls 3, which we find out.
Yeah.
So
and Jimmy confirmed that there's the kickstand.
Yeah. Flips open.
You can
sit there.
We already knew about that, though, didn't we?
Yeah, that was in the trailer, but...
Yeah, but he's just freaking out about all parts of it.
Yeah, because he's Jimmy Fallon.
About everything, so that wasn't... He's not really a surprise.
Hey,
really
get playing it. Jimmy. He loves games.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's playing it by moving the camera a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was... he played Super Mario Run. And I think that was one of the first times we actually got to see... You know, a good chunk of the game and how it actually plays and holds out. And as far as a mobile translation of Super Mario Brothers, yeah, I think they might have nailed this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
It looks really good. Apart from the fact that you can't move left, ever.
Well, it's a runner.
Yeah, it's a runner, so you gotta make that decision where what path you're going to take. You're going to go for those coins up there, or you're going to go for the ones down there.
You know? Yep.
So,
yeah, you just got to stop thinking you need to get all of the coins.
Yeah, it's like you're not going to be able to get everything. So, yeah, prioritize on what you want, what's going to give you the most benefit. Yeah, that looked good. The Switch looked, very promising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Miyamoto jamming with the band was interesting.
Yeah, Miyamoto whipped out his guitar and sat down with the Roots, and they played the Super Mario Brothers thing.
Yeah. Because of course they did.
So apparently a lot of people were surprised that Shigeru Miyamoto knows how to play.
Wow. I knew he played the banjo and guitar far from it. So.
I mean, that's how we got Wii Music.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. For years, so.
Yeah, and of course he got to jam with the Roots. I mean, that's a pretty awesome...
Yeah.
I just got to say, probably one of the coolest moments in TV I've ever seen.
Yeah.
An old Japanese man got to play with the Roots.
Well, it's not just any Japanese man.
Yeah, but that's sort of the way that most people that don't know what's going on thinks.
Yeah, could be.
Well, I would hope that at this point most of the viewership would figure out from watching the segment, oh, he's that guy.
Yeah.
You know,
he made the stuff that I love.
He made my childhood magical. That guy.
Yeah.
So, based all of his games on his childhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this goes a little ways towards kind of erasing the fact that Nintendo hates its fans. they still have a little ways to go to get rid of that stigma.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but if you're going to start marketing the Switch, this is actually not a bad way to do it.
That's true.
And I'm guessing, many people in this podcast will probably be buying a Switch day one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a month out from when they start unveiling actual details.
Yep. I'm ready.
But is your body ready?
Very much so.
Yeah.
So. Is your body and your wallet ready?
Ready. Yeah. It's mostly your wallet.
My wallet is not ready, but I'm working that part out.
Yeah. Yeah. Under Nintendo news, they've just announced Box Boy 3 for Japan.
Yep. Yeah, it's called Goodbye! Exclamation point. Box Boy! Exclamation point.
So he dies at the end, probably.
But yeah, the trailer they showed for this seems kind of even more of a departure than the last game. Now there are explosion blocks and to blow up parts of the level, along with rocket booster blocks that you can make. That solves some of the, I don't know about problems, but the dream that you have of like, well, I got these blocks right here, but how do I get them up there? Well, just set them up and just send them straight into the sky. And they also show something that looks like a kid tagging along with him and like a dirty box boy. I don't know, like Charlie Brown sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like a pig pen.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they still got plenty of good ideas for new interesting mechanics that looks really cool.
Mm.
Sort of along with that, they've got an amiibo.
Yeah.
Which is really cool looking.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed that this game has been stuck on the handhelds because it looks like something I really would like to play. It just looks like fun.
Yeah, and they announced a special edition on the 3DS for Japan that includes all three games.
Yeah.
Plus the amiibo and a soundtrack, so there's nice some really cool stuff coming to Japan.
Yeah.
That I hope comes out over here.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm pretty sure it'll be another Nintendo Direct imminent.
Yeah.
In other news, Shu Yoshida has been praising Nintendo for their return to convention. I don't think that should really be too surprising. What a lot of people don't understand about this gaming industry that we're currently in is that they don't actually hate each other.
No, Shu owns everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like,
it's actually been that way for quite some time.
Yeah. It's just their fan bases that hate each other. I'm cool with Shu Yoshida. It's been long overdue. Nintendo has kind of had issues the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the Switch will be going a good long way to remedying those issues.
Washing that off.
They're kind of basically going back to basics to an extent, but at the same time, they've basically created a whole new market.
Yeah, doing it their own way. Pretty cool.
And I'm glad. I want the Switch to succeed very much.
Yeah.
I want it to be good. I want it to be a game changer.
Yeah. Well, I think it will succeed. I mean, given that the bar that they're comparing it to is the Wii U, that's not a hard bar to beat at this point.
Yeah.
But, although I would say it will be a success by not being a game changer.
Yeah. Well, game changer in the sense of gimmicks, doesn't need super fancy things. But, in a way, that whole, setting it up wherever you are and giving the controller to a friend is kind of a gimmick in itself, but it's a gimmick that doesn't really, detract from the whole platform.
It's basically, the whole point was... Go ahead.
And it's less confusing than the way they were marketing the Wii U that said, oh, is this a controller for the Wii?
Yeah.
It's like, that's how you lose a ton of people.
Yeah, it is.
It is, yeah. Especially the problem with a lot of the Wii U's marketing was they never actually showed the Wii U itself. And when they did, it looks so much like a regular Wii that it's kind of hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see the controller and there's this box in the background.
Yeah, it's like, that's a thing, isn't it? So, yeah, that's not going to be a problem with the Switch. You look at a Switch, it's very distinctive. It's not a 3DS, it's not a Wii U, it's not an Xbox. It's definitely its own thing.
It's a handheld that can also work as a console, basically.
Yep. And if you put it in its docking station, it looks remarkably like a toaster.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, what else have we got? Well, we got some Sony stuff. It looks like Sony's also jumping into the mobile games segment of the market. They're kind of doing it with some of their old IPs. Wild Arms and Ark the Lad are going to be a couple of the first ones that they bring out.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's That is not a half-hearted endeavor.
Nope.
No.
That's swinging for the fences.
Yeah. Well, in Japan, anyway, because, yeah, those properties are quite well-loved over there. And to some extent here, whether we'll ever see those games or not is beyond us.
I don't see them staying in Japan forever.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hotshots Golf is on there.
Yeah.
Prop of the Rapper.
Some of these games lend themselves really well to mobile, so.
Yeah, especially if you time them with the console releases for some of these games.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Just don't do, you know, things like, you know, cross save. Well, not cross save, but, you know, unlock something to unlock something else in the other games. And, yeah. We've been down that road. It's really more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, they've done some of that stuff, but it's been more like just unlocking free DLC for the games.
Yeah. I find it cool that, you know, they're not just throwing PS1 games up on their mobile store. They're actually doing real, you know, new development on these games.
So, yeah, they're probably well aware
that they tried
pirates
that.
All over that stuff.
Yeah.
I was just saying, they tried the dumping of PS1 games before.
Yeah.
And that didn't go well.
Yeah, my phone's ringing, but I'm going to ignore that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we, you know, bring us home with our last story, guys.
Yeah, the PS4 has, as of last month, beaten the PS3 to 50 million sales by nearly a year and a half in its lifespan. It included the best Black Friday in PlayStation history. And now we're, you know, it didn't have the PS3's baggage either. The PS3 kind of succeeded despite all of the circumstances surrounding its first few years. But all comparisons that are going to be against the PS2 from here on in.
Yeah. Well, the PS4 didn't launch at $599, so it already has that going for it.
It didn't have a brand identity crisis out of the gate. You know, it. There were so many things that the PS3 had going against it that it's really miraculous that it did as well as it did once. Once they washed off the Kutaragi influence and went through the whole rebrand that they'd had around, I think it was late 2009, early 2010.
Yeah, it's just remarkable that, you know, it's, what, 3 years since the PS3 has been out. They've hit 50 million in 3 years. That's not insignificant.
That's what happens when you get it out in every territory and have everybody excited about it.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, put this $600 thing out, some people are getting it, but it doesn't start getting out there until it starts dropping price.
Yeah. Yeah, it also doesn't hurt that there was one SKU. You know, you didn't have the 20 GB one that was crippled and the 60 GB one that you actually wanted.
Yeah, that was the weird trend for last generation.
Yeah.
Or that same thing with the Xbox 360 with the hard drive.
Yeah.
And then the Xbox 3 shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that $50 million unit figure, Sony has 4 of the top 7 best-selling consoles of all time.
Wow.
All 4 of their consoles placed up there.
Yeah.
There's the NES right above the PS4. The Wii is 3rd. Xbox 360 is 4th.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes out now. That obviously the debate that will go down in history now is whether the PS2 or the PS4 is the superior system. And thankfully, we're not going to be facing down that debate in a complete sense for another several years.
Yeah.
But that definitely looks to be what we're headed toward.
Yeah. It's like, if you really kind of compare the PS2 and the PS4 as year one, it's remarkable how similar they were. Because both of them had very, very little in the way of, you know, really stellar games during their first year. It only was, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years after they started going that it really started to pick up. And
I don't know, the PS2 had some fantastic games. It had GTA 3, Metal Gear Solid 2, Final Fantasy 10 that first holiday afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, Tekken Tag Tournament at launch, Ridge Racer 5.
Time Splitters. Yeah.
Eco, Jak and Daxter.
SSX.
Yeah. Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
GT 3.
Well, those weren't, those weren't, you know, immediately.
No, those are the summer and fall after.
Yeah. And it's like, it took a little while for both systems to start getting their stride. But once they did, it's, yeah. good
I still long for the day that there's a proper Ridge Racer game on the PS4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned. Maybe we'll see that sooner. But yeah, I think we got a show, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, apologies for the weird phone call in the middle of the show, but that's okay. Stuff happens sometimes. You never know.
It could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah, your computer could have died in the middle of saying something. So that, you know, that's nice that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So
just two more days, and I'll have that new hard drive.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And we'll see you next week.
Please don't die, Trico.